Alors, nouvelle édition de Apéro UX dans le parc le 31 juillet dernier. Il faisait semi-beau, c'était gris, mais il faisait quand même d'une belle température. On a eu le plaisir d'échanger autour du thème du vibe coding, qui est très d'actualité, très intriguant, avec PJ Goni, qui est design engineer chez Plan de Montréal, et Séraphin Hochard, qui est directeur de produit chez Zeit et cofondateur de Francoflex avec son épouse, qui est du Language Learning with AI. Avec, évidemment, sous l'animation experte de notre Alexis Morin, qui est dans l'organisation d'Apéro UX et qui était aussi designer de produits senior principal chez Autodesk. C'était un événement vraiment convivial dans le Parc Laurier à Montréal. On l'a fait en mode 5 à 7. Évidemment, on n'a pas pu inviter 200 personnes. Ça n'aurait pas été extrêmement facile dans un parc et d'avoir une diffusion du son qui était excellente pour tout le monde. Donc, on s'est donné la peine, évidemment, de l'enregistrer comme d'habitude pour le rendre disponible à tout le monde. Vous pourrez voir dans la description de l'événement ici les liens et les documents dont nous parlent les invités du panel qui sont des références et des cours, des shortcuts en fait pour mieux comprendre un peu qu'est-ce qui est inclus là, dans l'apprentissage de l'AI et ou l'intégration pour la description, la création de produits numériques. Donc, merci beaucoup tout le monde qui se sont déplacés. C'était bien agréable, puis on va essayer de se reprendre avant la fin de l'été. Je vous souhaite une bonne écoute.
Bonsoir et bienvenue à Apéro UX. On est rendu juillet, oui, 2025, dans le parc. Le sujet, vous savez, le sujet, c'est vibe coding ce soir. Qu'est-ce que c'est le vibe coding? La définition stricte, c'est d'utiliser un large language model pour écrire du code. Puis si tu veux être très très strict, t'as pas le droit de regarder le code, t'as juste le droit de focusser sur le output, qu'est-ce que le code génère pour créer, mon Dieu, tout ce qui te vient en tête, tout ce que tu peux imaginer. Ça peut être des interfaces, ça peut être des générateurs de particules, ça peut être des animations, des modèles 3D, mais t'as pas le droit de regarder le code. Le format de la conversation, comme d'hab, dans les Apéro UX, on fait un panel. Ce soir, on ouvre ça un peu en fishbowl. Qu'est-ce que ça veut dire, fishbowl? Ça n'enregistre pas?
Continue.
OK, on continue. Fishbowl, ça veut dire si vous avez de l'expérience ou un moment de la conversation vous interpelle, vous avez quelque chose à partager, une anecdote, une histoire. Vous êtes absolument bienvenus. On a un micro supplémentaire. Venez contribuer à la conversation. On va être super heureux de vous recevoir, d'entendre vos histoires, vos anecdotes. On a déjà parlé à quelques personnes là, dans la foule qui, justement, là, ont de l'expérience en vibe coding. On serait curieux d'entendre ce que vous avez à partager. Aussi, en français, en anglais, c'est accepté. La conversation risque de pivoter d'un côté et de l'autre. Alors, voilà, c'est un peu l'intro de fait. Puis, petit point administratif. Si vous êtes familier avec la conférence CanUX qui a lieu à Ottawa, on est en contact avec l'organisateur. Puis, il a été assez gracieux pour nous offrir des rabais de 30% pour les gens ici ce soir. Le rabais est bon jusqu'au 10 août seulement. Puis la conférence, elle, c'est le 1er au 4 octobre à Ottawa. Le code, c'est Apéro UX, tout en un mot. Si vous en souvenez pas, revenez nous voir, là, on va vous régler ça. Mais c'est une super conférence, c'est organisé par un monsieur Cornelius Racheru qui est dans la communauté UX depuis ses tout débuts, je pense. Ça fait un bon bout. Donc, sans plus se faire attendre, on va faire un petit tour de table, on va se présenter, puis on va démarrer le truc. Séraphin, veux-tu?
Je peux le faire franglais. Donc, mon nom est Séraphin, je travaille en produit, en fait, depuis une quinzaine d'années. Donc, j'ai commencé en tant que développeur, iPhone, mobile, OG, iPhone 3.2. J'ai après switché en vraiment produits web. Et en ce moment, je travaille pour une startup qui s'appelle Zeit. C'est un logiciel pour envoyer et recevoir des vidéos de vos clients. À côté, je commence ma startup d'IA depuis 2-3 ans avec ma femme. Et on fait de l'apprentissage des langues avec l'IA. Donc, c'est comme B2B Duolingo qui s'adapte au vocabulaire de la compagnie ou du domaine de travail. Donc, tout ça, ce projet-là a été généré, je dirais, à 90% avec de l'IA. Donc, c'est pour ça que je peux vous montrer un petit peu ce qui a marché, ce qui n'a pas marché aujourd'hui.
Salut tout le monde. Moi, je m'appelle PG. Je viens d'Italie, donc mon français est plutôt terrible. Je veux comprendre tout, mais je pense que je veux répondre en anglais. So I'll try that for the most part. In my day-to-day, I'm a design engineer, so spend a lot of time designing and coding at a startup in Vieux-Port. And in my own time, I build a lot of stuff. I just like getting my hands dirty. And more I've been using vibe coding, AI, to build lots of product, React, Next.js, Swift UI, just trying to touch as many things as I can.
As a contributor to this conversation, Alexis, I work at Autodesk down in the Old Port. We make software for just about any kind of engineer you can think of, except software engineers. So mechanical, water, electric, also cinema, 3D, games. I work on the brand side, so we make the main Autodesk.com website. I'm in charge of that design system, and so I've been super, super interested in how we can bring brand experiences to life, express ideas on a canvas, throw them in the browser. Our leadership is super, super bullish about getting AI to do work for us. And so that's my angle, is in connecting our design system with vibe coding systems and seeing the magic that we can do. So specifically, can you tell us about your startup? How did you build the product from nothing to where you are? What parts were vibe coded? How do you use it on a day-to-day basis? How does creation versus modification work?
For sure. So I feel like, I am technical in nature. So I think we have different perspective, which is going to be pretty good. When my wife originally had the idea of, you know, there is a lack of tools in terms of conversational AI for French. People need to practice French, and they can't unless they know someone that speaks French, which is not the case for everybody. So that was in 2023 when you started to be able to talk to ChatGPT. And that's when basically we discussed a little bit, and over Christmas, I built a prototype. Back in the days when I was a web developer, I was a FTP, you know, HTML developer. I didn't know about React and all of these more complex, modern web systems. So basically, I was like, great, let me learn at the same time. And that's when, you know, I pulled up ChatGPT and started asking questions. Where do I start? And at the time, there was no vibe coding. There was no agent or any IDE. So it was purely asking ChatGPT, how do I connect this API with this thing, and then try to make it work. So I think the big thing for me that has always been a key part of building anything is being curious. So like I basically asked a bunch of dumb questions about web development and about the basics. And I think I managed to pick it up really quickly thanks to all of the new tooling. And as the tooling evolved, I evolved as well with it. So I went from, you know, just asking ChatGPT to have something that was kind of working. We got a prototype that was just a conversational AI, you know, like you speak, it gives it to an AI and it generates audio. That's it. We went to a school in BC and we started giving the prototype to kids, and it was a vibe coded prototype, and they had fun with it, and we're like, great, I can build something. It's an app now. And I have users, even though they're not paying because they're 16. But there are people that can validate that this idea is an idea worth pursuing. And then from then on, we just actually started a company, started getting users. So today we have paying users and we're trying to scale the company. So I'm at a different stage where the problems I hit are performance. They are, I have 4 interns and they all need to contribute to this vibe-coded code. And they're all out of school. So like, you know, master's or bachelor degree in engineering, and they're all curious. And they're all curious about the future of their work. So the first thing I do, and I did it yesterday to onboard the last one, is like give them an OpenAI key cursor and basically say, your new job is to be a conductor. I love music. So like, I'm basically telling them that the knowledge is good, but their job will be able to see different parts and put them together in a smart way. And that's where their brain and their engineer brain will be useful, not just write code that, you know, you can find online.
So that's the full
long
product
answer.
Loop.
Yeah,
like
long answer to a
discovery,
short question.
Validation. I love the product angle to it, especially of like trying to find product market fit super early on.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're also obviously like using AI to learn and elevate yourself in the process, which we shouldn't sleep on that. Just because the AI can do it, doesn't mean we shouldn't see what's behind the curtain, try to understand really what's happening. And thinking about what your interns are doing, we're seeing that's the new thing, right? Agents, and next is multiple agents and therefore orchestration. Is that vibe coding, or do you need engineers to be able, like your interns have interns now?
My interns have interns, yeah. And it's a tree that went from one person to everybody have interns. I actually have an example. So the other company I worked at, Zeit, we are an established company. We're 50 people. We've been around for 10 years. And all the engineers are senior. And that was a completely different vibe where they were more scared of the shift. So I think you have two kind of people. You have the pragmatic and like, it doesn't work in this way, so you shouldn't just rely on it, or the optimist, which are like, let me just try it with AI and we'll see what happens. And it was a long, it took a while for the existing engineers to accept that they could use it to their advantage. We can talk later about adoption, but like the way to do it was like, do a hackathon, just try it, you know, like let's take 3 days and just try to see its limits, try to see what works, what doesn't. And let me know if you need help. I think that's like building the support system around AI is where I had to set up some rules for the company. Did that answer your questions or did I go on a tangent?
Absolutely. No, it's a great, great story arc there. PG, how do you use vibe coding on the day-to-day? When did you get started? How has it changed since you started using it?
Yeah, I was one of the more skeptical people because I learned to code at the same time that I learned to design. So it's been one and one for me the whole time. And I was always like, well, that's my superpower. It's like I'm, you know, different from the average designer because I can also code and I can take these ideas and bring them over. So I was a bit scared at first. And that was definitely pragmatic and like, well, it fails 50% of the time. I'm just going to leave it alone. But I think, you know, now I see just the multiplier effect, because my role, my title is head of design. So I'm not supposed to code. I mean, nobody tells me what to do, but like I shouldn't, or that's not in my role description to code, but it's just where the value is for our users is to for me to get in there and get my hands dirty. And so that's been the biggest multiplier effect has been, I have this idea. I have a very clear vision on how to implement it. I won't even hand it off to a developer. I'm just going to start building and let AI do, you know, 50 to 75% of the work as I orchestrate and kind of touch different points and bring them together. And it's just been so powerful because I care about the details much more than any of my engineers. That's who we are as designers. And so being able to get in there and do it has sped me up, but it's also sped the engineers up because they don't want to spend time adjusting shadows and creating little animations that are really kind of difficult to do. I want to do that. I will stay until 8 p.m. at work just doing animations because I love that. So it's sped me up in that way. And what's cool too is, as I said, I like to build things on the side. So I have my, you know, Japanese learning app. You know, a couple of years ago, I tried to build a festival scheduling app for, you know, concerts and schedules. And it was, it took me all summer to build the shittiest prototype. And then a couple of years ago, then I tried to start building this Japanese app. And just by spending 1 hour in the morning at the cafe, like, you know, vibe coding, I've actually been able to build something that's like in people's hands, you know, not a ton, but I have like 600 users right now who have my app on their phone. And it's because of AI that I can do that. Again, 1 hour a day, it's not a lot of time, but if you do it consistently and you have an intern that's doing a lot of the work for you, you can do a lot of stuff and kind of bring those ideas to life without needing a company of people.
And that knowledge, you're shocking. Bringing it to your day-to-day job.
100%. I think that was a great point that you brought up as well, as, you know, learning. And also, it's kind of scary to go to a senior engineer and ask them any question about engineering. They say there's no stupid questions, but you can definitely feel pretty stupid sometimes. AI is never going to call you stupid or be like, why are you bothering me right now? Like, AI's got tons of time. You can ask it anything, no shame, and everything it gives you back, you absorb and you know, bring that back. Again, comes in terms of animation, like just even engineering practices, you can learn tons. And as you said, like, bring it back to work. I'm bringing things from work back to my personal projects, friends' websites. Like, everything is just this like wheel, a flywheel that keeps turning, and you keep learning more and more. It's fantastic.
When you're prompting, how much do you like accept what it takes? How much are you skeptical? I always feel very self-conscious when I'm waiting after cursor. Like, okay, it's doing the thing. At the same time, I don't want to like check out and go do something else. This is my main task, but the AI is kind of doing right now. And there's a sense of, how much time am I spending optimizing my time by using an AI versus waiting for it and then fixing its mistakes?
I have a good quote to start. My previous CTOs, I'm still in contact with a bunch of them, and I asked them a little bit, like, what's their view on AI, and just, do you accept what's in front of you, or do you just verify what are the different kind of frameworks that you have? And the best quote that I have, that I will share, was, you know, an AI is a PhD that doesn't know how to tie its shoes. So you need to make sure that you verify the basics. You said at the beginning, like, look at the outcome. But I think where a more senior engineer can not have his job stolen and just like be even more powerful is like be that verificator and have the skill to like go beyond and just like, okay, it changed this. Does it make sense? Should I stop it now, or should I stop it in 10 next buttons clicks? But yeah, I feel like it's always trust but verify. That's been my motto. And so far, you know, I have stuff in production. And so far, knock on real wood, but, you know, nothing crazy, because I know that I will test double the amount of what I used to test when I used to code, because I was trusting my own code, like, oh, I know it's going to do that. It didn't. But an AI, you know, you save some time on the coding part, so add a bit more time on the QA part. That's been so far what kind of works.
I think I have like a sort of like a spectrum of answers. To me, what I think compounds to the most time saved is actually just tab. So you know, if you start writing a line, it'll try to finish it for you, and you just hit tab, and that 99% of the time it's doing the right thing. And you're just doing that a lot. I think in a day it ends up saving like 30 minutes to an hour of just not typing boilerplate. The second level is it's doing a bunch of stuff on one file. I think that's pretty good too. Like, a lot of the times I'll run it, I'll do my best to scope it to one file and try and make the change and my prompt small enough that it just affects this one kind of context, maybe like one other file. When it starts to touch three or four files, that's when I get pretty scared. And I'll usually just, yeah, exactly. I'll usually kind of git commit, like save my code in that state so that I can run the prompt and then just kind of accept, wing it, see if it runs,
And then if it runs, okay. If it runs and it breaks, I'll try and figure it out. But I'd say most of the time I try to trust it, and you can always revert. Again, I use Git all the time. Like, I'm obsessively committing so that I can go back to previous states. And in that case, sort of just wing it, hope that it works. And if it doesn't, it's easy enough to revert or at least keep trying.
I feel like there's some use cases where if you know it's touching something complex, verify more. If it's mostly documentation or like a marketing page, no shame in that. But I mean, depending on how much it can affect your users, that's when you need to change your level of verification.
Yeah, even I would say to piggyback on that, like, I think if it's a lot of UI changes, like, it's fine, and you can open the page, you can see if something was broken. If you're doing some deep logic, like you're touching backend code, that starts to get a lot scarier. Like, you know, what if you drop a table in your database by accident because you just winged it and accepted it? Like, that's really scary.
That was in the news recently, wasn't there? Really? Like an AI that, like, was it? What's your name? What do you do?
Ouais, ok, là vous m'entendez. Alors, bonjour, mon nom c'est Yanoué, je suis designer UX et manager dans une compagnie industrielle, très ingénieur, très très immense. Oui, il y avait quelqu'un qui utilisait, je me rappelle plus c'est quoi l'outil qu'il utilisait, mais c'était un outil justement pour vibe coder, et il a dit à l'agent, ah, on est en code freeze, je change plus rien, puis straight up drop le database. Puis une chance, il y avait une copie arrière, mais sinon, il ne l'avait plus. Puis il a donné une deuxième chance, puis il l'a refaite. Il a encore dit, genre, code freeze.
Il a fait la même erreur deux fois.
Ouais. No. le genre. Mais en plus, j'étais aussi en train de travailler sur une question pour peut-être venir poser. Là. Je vois la valeur d'utiliser le vibe coding pour faire du prototypage, puis d'itérer très vite. Mais pour un produit final... Surtout pour si c'est une PME ou une startup que toi tu fais, est-ce que tu fais encore assez confiance à ça? Parce que l'agent AI a peut-être pas tout le contexte. Fait que pour avoir une bonne architecture, pour te protéger contre la cybersécurité, il n'y a pas un risque là, surtout si c'est ta compagnie, il y a un risque financier à ce moment-là?
Très bonne question. Et justement, le fait que j'en ai peur, je check encore deux fois plus. Je pense que mon rôle est passé de développer 80% du temps à développer peut-être 40, puis rajouter peut-être un 20 de QA. Fait que je trouve qu'au final, le output est mieux, ça fonctionne, et je sais exactement comment il fonctionne. Mais ouais, il y a toujours un risque. Ce que je pense qui est très important, et dans la compagnie où est-ce qu'on est 50, on a dû mettre des règles. Puis au lieu de dire vibe coding, en fait, on l'a changé pour AI assisted coding dans les règles parce qu'on dit aidez-vous, faites le tab, tab, parfait, comme ça tu le vois au fur et à mesure. Mais on ne touche pas au QA, on ne touche pas au test, il faut qu'il y ait des tests. Donc il y a quand même un niveau de review qui est important. Et les quatre stagiaires dont je vous parlais, il y a des code review. Fait qu'on garde le fait que ce soit en production. La seule différence, c'est qu'on garde QA code review. Puis en fait, ce qui est bien, c'est que dès qu'il y a quelqu'un qui demande un changement dans le code review, je le copie-colle puis je lui demande de changer. Mais au moins, ça a été revu assez de fois que je suis quand même confiant. Mais c'est clair que il faut même que les code bases changent. Ça, c'est peut-être un peu plus dans le technique, mais il faut que les code bases changent. Et maintenant, même dans Cursor, tu peux rajouter des... au lieu de faire un gros fichier de définition et de donner toute la code base, tu peux dire dans ce fichier-là, voici la documentation et focus-toi dessus. Donc, faire des changements plus précis que voici ma code base. Mais ouais.
Mais mon point, c'est ça, c'est... il n'y a pas le scope au complet, puis souvent ça peut l'idée à laisser une grande porte ouverte. Tu sais, t'as acheté la lock la plus secure pour ce petit morceau-là, puis ce fichier-là, mais t'as laissé une porte grande ouverte pour cybersecurity, quelqu'un qui peut t'attaquer. Fait que c'est vraiment. Je me rappelle aussi quand DeepSea est sorti, il y a du monde qui testait, puis il faisait comme hey, j'ai donné mon code, mon petit jeu que j'essaie de baser. Moi, je suis capable de voir c'est quoi, puis lui, il n'était pas capable de voir parce qu'il n'était pas capable de scoper assez grand que ça a telle relation avec telle autre affaire. Puis l'autre, là, c'est bien que pour toi, toi, tu as le skin in the game, c'est sûr que toi, tu vas checker. Puis là, tu as des interns qui veulent Tu dis, ils viennent de juste sortir d'école, ils veulent se prouver. Dans, moi, je suis dans une très grosse corporation, puis il y en a qui... C'est des lifers, puis tu sais, sont moins motivés d'être detail-oriented. Là,
il y a un podcast à écouter que j'ai adoré, Clairvaux, How AI, puis c'est Launch Darkly. Le code base a 10 ans et ils ont 100 personnes. Et dans le fond, ils vont pendant une heure sur comment tu gères ce genre de problème. Mais c'est trust and verify, trust but verify, puis split le code, fais même des codes plus petits. Puis... Mais ouais, c'est clairement le challenge en ce moment, je pense, c'est ça. C'est ça scale pour certains produits, mais si ce que tu fais, c'est des données clients, peut-être pas la chose pour toi.
Là, on est très cru dans le code depuis tantôt. Moi, ça me dérange pas, mais c'est une soirée avec beaucoup de designers UX. Je me demande, est-ce qu'on peut... Sortons notre tête de l'eau, regardons un petit peu qu'est-ce qui se fait au niveau des outils, des produits pour les designers. Ça ressemble à quoi le vibe coding niveau design? On pense à Figma Make, on pense à V0. Dans le fond, c'est des outils de design nouveau genre où on décrit l'interface qu'on veut. Puis ça nous crée quelque chose, puis ça le crée en code. Puis là, en fait, l'avantage, c'est que c'est interactif, c'est dans un navigateur. Anecdote que je peux partager de comment on s'en sert. C'est si vous faites des maquettes en desktop et en mobile, c'est arrivé à tout le monde, c'est sûr. Ça arrive chez un dev. Vous changez la taille du navigateur en taille tablette à peu près. Puis là, les breakpoints sont chiés. Il y a quelque chose qui marche pas, puis là ils viennent vous voir, puis là, ah ben qu'est-ce qu'on fait? D'être capable, puis ce qu'on a découvert justement en amenant le design dans le navigateur plus tôt, c'est qu'on découvre ces problèmes-là quand le travail est encore du côté design. Donc on peut quand même appliquer notre cerveau design, puis on n'a pas les mêmes dates butoirs que les devs ont, puis de dire, ben ça, faut que ça sorte pour vendredi, puis il faut le régler vite. On peut prendre le temps de bien faire les choses parce que c'est dans un browser. On a vérifié tous les breakpoints, c'est fluide, c'est magnifique. Ça, c'est un des avantages majeurs que je vois à cette pratique. Avez-vous testé ces outils-là? Qu'est-ce que ça vous dit? Est-ce que c'est fiable? Est-ce que ça vaut la peine d'investir là-dedans?
I just quickly want to jump back to the question for one second because I think it's one tool that I want to mention that because I get the fear that you have. Graphite is kind of like GitHub, but AI. And GitHub Copilot can review your PRs. So if you're scared you're going to push some sketchy stuff to production, use those tools. They will review your code and tell you don't do that or this can be improved, this and that. Like there's a bit of layer of protection. I haven't used a ton of Figma Make or these kind of interactive tools. I've experimented with Figma Make specifically. I think you mentioned the interactivity of it. To me, that is the biggest sell is here's my design system. Here's a screen. Can you make this? It's rough at the moment. It gets like a decent amount of the way there. But it's really, really interesting because you get a canvas that you can interact with and you can say, hey, this button is messed up or this is out of place. You can specifically select a Figma frame and ask it to kind of make changes to that. So I think it's the future. I question if it's the present because it's still in a place where it's these tools are struggling a bit. Like code is so easy for a computer to understand. It's just language. I think CSS and visuals is where it still struggles a little bit. I've had mixed experiences with these kinds of tools. Not sure if that's fully answering the question.
Yeah, and to what you said, like the future is here. It is also not distributed equally. Not sure who that is quoted from. I've heard it before.
Take the credit.
Oh, gosh, no. We're seeing companies who are adopting this. Shopify is doing this, where designers are hired based on the end-to-end experience, not the Figma file that they can make. A Figma file, I've always said this. It's a picture of a website at best. It's a communication tool made of pixels. Great, super useful. It can absolutely, like, it has no state to it. And if you want interactivity, if you want states, you have to jump through a lot of hoops. You have to connect everything with spaghetti and add variables. Or if you go to the dark side and you say, like, hey, Figma, make, build something, hook it up. How should this behave? I think it's an interesting way to bridge that gap. But it brings to mind that conversation with the senior engineer of, like, what do you do with these assets? Where do you go with this? How do you share it to somebody in a reliable way?
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the challenge for a long time. I think you also maybe touched on it of, like, well, it's a big scope. Like, if you're actually, I think these tools are so good right now for something new. Like, if you have a new idea and you're trying to build something from scratch, it can get you very far. But some of these tools like Figma Make, our code base is massive and it's full of garbage code too from people, you know, coming and going and like leaving trash behind. So Figma Make is, it can't you know, just jump in and have the full scope of everything that we're doing. What I find Cursor to be pretty good at that, like understanding your code base. There's a couple of IDEs that are, I can't remember the name right now, that are like known to fully index all of your code and get a lot of context. But yeah, I think that's the tough part is, well,
the only success I've had with this, I think, is the components are made separately in the design system. And again, not a designer, so the words I'm going to use are going to be horrible. But like, just know the component names and what they do. And then whenever you prompt when you code, it's like, please go use the loader on this page and do this, like playing like Legos. That's the only times where the output is what I want and not making things up. It's using your own brain and be like, okay, take this, make something that works out of it. And then if there's something, sometimes I write it like, if there's something that isn't clear, go in planning mode. And Claude, if you use Claude has a planning mode versus dev mode. I think it's like Figma where it's like the, you know, dev mode versus dev mode design, where basically go in planning mode, tell me what you're about to do. And then it goes a bit deeper on the planning piece. And then you're like, great, please do it. It tells you, the funny thing, it tells you it's going to take 3 months. And then you're like, great, we'll do it today. That's a common meme there.
That's a solid reaction from Claude. I've found something very, very similar with Figma Make. They recently released, publish your design system for Figma Make. And tried that a few times, sent it to my manager and said, like, hey, like, does this look odd to you? Does this look off? And the interactivity is there, the responsiveness is there. But kind of like what you were saying, it's not using the right design system. It's sort of one click away. So what we've been doing at Autodesk is, Figma has this feature called Code Connect. It's like a year and a half old, this feature. It was intended for developers to inspect any component in Figma, and rather than just getting properties on the right panel, it gives you a blurb of code, and it supports like React, Swift, web components, like what have you. And it does require like manual binding. So any time you have a Figma component, it has properties that you've defined as a maintainer, and you go to the code component and you have to tell the system which property equals what property, what value equals what value. And it quickly becomes apparent also like the delta between the two. That's an interesting exercise to do. But then the result of that is agents are able to use the MCP protocol to essentially go into Figma and say like, hey, what do you have selected? Give me the code for exactly what's on your canvas right now. And I found the success rate of that to be much greater essentially, because kind of like what you said is like, I have my list of ingredients here. Yeah. So many AIs will start from scratch. Yeah. They'll go from,
absolutely nothing. So that's one avenue I've been exploring a little bit.
I will say I love Code Connect. I think it's such a good idea. I don't know why you can't just AI it. Like, I should be able to give it a Figma component and say, here's my code component, do all the work. Because there's that Figma.connect file that you like map everything. It just seems like the easiest thing for AI to
But it does.
Take does it?
So no. It has the default, the initial mode of usage they released with is the command line utility.
Yeah.
And you give it a Figma frame and you give it, and it lives inside of your code base. So you run it inside of a folder and it will read your Figma file. It will read all of the properties and it says, do you want me to attempt to map the properties using AI? So maybe try it again soon.
Yeah, when I tried it, it wasn't a thing.
It works okay. It works surprisingly well. Like it gets a few of them done for you. So definitely try that.
To go on a little design engineering tangent, because I think what you mentioned too is, well, it's tough when there's a big disparity between your Figma components and your code components. Because I built our design system both in Figma and the code, I set it up to be as one-to-one as possible. And I think if you're able to do that and bring that culture to kind of your product team, even if you're not writing the code, I'm very excited to try that out. Because when my Figma component says variant primary, my code component says variant primary. When it says alert, it says alert. Like it's mapped 90% the same. That's like I'm gonna go home and try this after.
Please do it. Yeah, we've been digging ourselves out of that hole for a little while, but it's a very easy sell to designers to say like, hey, it's called this in code. We're just gonna rename it, and renaming components or properties. Or property values in Figma is like extremely cheap because it's all mapped to underlying IDs and it knows where to go and knows where to update. Code doesn't do that. Like you will break a lot of things. So
unless you use AI to change it everywhere.
Let's talk about what's your tool set? What's your kit and what's your flow of like going from idea to prototype to idea to prototype to like this is good enough. So where are you spending your time in that?
I think most recently, since I'm a PM with Zeit, I want to write my tickets like I write a prompt. So it's like, go do this, here's this component, do this. So my ideal is actually the first thing I do is write as descriptive as possible. So then I can copy paste it and try. So then I get my prototype and then I go a bit further ahead. And what I do, so I use Claude Code. I was talking to someone in UX recently, and I told her, I think Claude Code is just at the verge of being too techy, but actually I think it's accessible for everybody because you can play with it and just play with text and then go more deeper and deeper. But I think Claude Code is great at reasoning. So that's what's in my tool stack. The rest, honestly, I feel like there's so many tools, it's hard to keep up for everybody. So I try to just go with the most broad ones. I used to be on Product Hunt, look at the cool ones. Now I just look, what's the most used? What's the one that has the most documentation examples? So I can copy and modify as much as possible. So like I stayed, and I did for the company I work at Zeit, I did a slide that I showed earlier that is basically like, here's the tool for what job. And I kept it to 5 max. So like lovable Replit. One good example of AI, side note, I train our SEO team to build marketing pages with tools. You know, those tools like WebP to PNG converters. I train my SEO team. We build 70 apps, and we have like 100,000 visits a month from these tools, all made with AI vibe coding. So that's my little like check. Amazing. But like these are scalable. They can have a lot of traffic. So Replit, Claude Code, they all have different purpose. But the only thing is like try to keep it simple because there's so many tools, plugins.
I just want to say the AI tool that fucked up the database is Replit.
Yeah. So, but Replit, I feel, is a 0 to 100. It has everything, and it's trying to do everything from A to Z. So it's good for prototyping, but like production, for example, those SEO apps, those 70 SEO apps, it's all Replit, but they don't have a database. They are not connected with our real platform. So like, it's great for that, but is Replit good if you plug it to actual customer data? Maybe not.
Yeah, that's super cool. Love seeing like results and numbers and like actual people using the products. That's sick. Yeah, for me, it's mostly like a lot of Figma. I think I used to be very strict. I always pushed for like Figma is the most pixel perfect idea of what your website should be or your app. But I think I'm more on the camp now of, well, it's just a picture of an idea more than anything. It's, okay, let me ideate, especially now we're very much in refinement mode at Planned. So I'm spending a lot of time doing animations and motion and like real eye candy, which is just not worth it in Figma. Like I do, you know, some like storyboards of like, first this is here, then it moves here, it kind of spins, that kind of thing. But very mid-fi, and then move into Cursor a lot. Like Cursor is, I spend probably half my time at work in Cursor. I use Claude as the model usually, the Sonnet, I think, or which one's like, the latest?
For example, I used to be really into which models does what best, yeah. And then I dropped it all, and I'm like, use Claude Code, I don't know what it does.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I trust the Silicon Valley engineers to like find what is best for me. But I just know that it's best at reasoning. Great. Mm-hmm. And then it does its thing.
Yeah, Cursor has an auto mode where it just kind of picks the right thing.
I think that's something that the AI companies do so poorly is they put out another model and they give it a name, and they say that it's like, what does any of it mean? And then the Geminis have the Flash version, and it's extremely hard to pick anything to make any valid decisions. So I'm kind of on your camp now, where you just like, number go up, just choose a new version. Yeah. And it's usually like pretty great. And they're always like, oh, well, this one is much better at physics. Like, I'm not doing physics.
Or not, no one is at that.
haven't done it for like decades. No, thanks.
The only shift I've done is really go from like to Claude Code to be my go-to and try it, because it's funny. It even works with Obsidian, like your own notes, files. It works with anything of just reasoning, looking through, documenting. I use it, I think, as a PM. So I write my ticket. I put it in whatever prototyping tool or Claude Code. And then at the end, I'm like, document everything for me. And I copy it back to the documentation. So I used to be really poor at documentation with like Franglish stuff. And now it's like, just do it, write it, so I can copy paste it. And then it's a good recap of everything we've been working on.
Yeah, I guess the last tool I also use a lot is Graphite. Like big shout out to Graphite. I think it's, our head of engineering introduced it to us, and it's, everybody uses it all the time. Again, it's really good at catching silly things too. Where like,
what does it do? Is it a review tool?
It basically replaces GitHub for us. So you can open a PR, you can see comments, and then it has, I think it's called Diamond. It's like their AI that just reads your code, leaves a bunch of comments, and you know, a lot of times it's like silly things, like, oh, you left a comment here. Like we don't push comments to prod. You left a comment in your code, or is this variable correct here? This and that. Like really small things to some bigger stuff, where again, you're not wasting a really smart engineer's time on just the dumbest little things. I'll let it do a couple passes and then finally ask actual review from a real engineer. But by that time, it saved a ton of time. And you know, I'm not a professional engineer necessarily by trade, so it's good to have someone who's infinitely patient. And there
and
are
I'm
no
not an engineer
questions.
By trade, so it's a good...
it's the perfect place to be, honestly. Yeah, so that's a good tool. I'd say Figma,
all the way from, you know, ideas and Fig Jam to storyboards. Cursor for whatever model it decides to pick. I put it on auto, and it's usually Claude, but it's whatever model. And then Graphite for the last check before you break the database.
I'll add, just because it was not mentioned, Warp, if you've heard of it. Warp is it's a terminal. It's an AI-powered terminal. It has the upsell is a bunch of team features where you can share prompts and et cetera. Don't use that. What it's really good at is if you don't remember the exact command for a git something something or an FFmpeg conversion parameter or whatever, you can ask it in words and it's just like, I got you. And so the output is a terminal command, and just that has saved me like so much headache, so much reading of documentation. And as somebody who's like, yeah, development adjacent, it's like, I know a little bit, but I will ask the stupid questions. Like that, I asked Warp the stupid questions, and it just like, amazing, does a really good job.
I'll actually throw two more tools that are not necessarily vibe coding, but like I think most of us are designers, and like it's important to gather context and understand problems. So one that I've been using, a bit iffy on, I'm waiting for Comet, the browser by Perplexity, to come out, because that I think will be really good. But I've been using Dia, which is the by the browser company who used to make Arc, and now they kind of don't anymore. That's really cool. As you said, like, I don't want to read an entire website of documentation, so I'll just like open the chat and chat with the tab and say like, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I'll spit out code. It can take instructions. It knows that I use Tailwind and I use Next and I use Swift UI, so it's really smart. And then one that I have been using a lot that's great for research, if you're doing like foundational research discovery, Notebook LM, which is, again, not really vibe coding at all, but it's a tool by Google. You just feed it a bunch of links, a bunch of PDFs, websites, videos. It builds a knowledge base, and then you can ask it questions. You can listen to a podcast about everything that you've just fed it. You can leave notes.
I think students use it a ton now.
Yeah,
huge. You put your course notes, and then you can get a podcast from your course notes.
I fed it right when it came out. We fed it like threads of Slack conversations, and the resulting podcast sounded like a reality TV show. This person said this, that person said that. They were angry.
Hopefully it's gotten better since then, not full.
I don't know what else to expect, though. Like, it did the right thing. Part of it was on us for like fooling around with it and feeding it like very human conversation, like nothing deep, nothing researched. But yeah, Notebook LM it's impressive.
It's scary. Like the way they have conversations and have stutters and ums, and like, it's just too human. Like, if I was a grandma, you could scam me really, really good with something like that.
Kind of pivoting topics here. I do want to give a big shout out to like Anthropic, who's been doing so much in this space. They have a course you can follow on their website, which is it's a great bird's eye view on what does it mean to be working with AI? Like so much of this shift is existential questions towards our jobs, towards our existence, looking at all of the layoffs that are happening. And their team has created a curriculum that, at least for myself, has like very much shifted the way I think about things in a way that is very optimistic, where they call this the Anthropic Foundations of AI, I think. So if anyone is having like existential moments with all of these tools, I certainly recommend that.
I tried something really fun today. So I was talking to our Mac developer. Zeit is a Mac app, Windows app. So we were trying to see, can we touch our Mac app with Claude? It's in the terminal, Claude code. So I was like, how do I pass it a design? I had no idea. So I was like, can you Google it? Or the thing that I tried is I just asked Claude, like, if I give you, how can I give you a design? And it's like, you can give me a screenshot with a PNG and just drag and drop it here. And like, it knows itself. So it, you can just ask the AI to, like, how do you want me to talk to you? And sometimes I do that with prompts too, is like improve the prompts before running it, and then great, now run it. So they're self-aware. They know themselves.
They absolutely are not. Do not. I try
they
very
look self-aware.
I try very, very hard to like not humanize them, not paint them as thinking machines, because they do not think. They are like sophisticated autocomplete engines. No more, right? Yeah. Like, not a single novel idea has ever come out of an AI. They might smash two existing ideas together that have never been smashed together before, but not a single new idea. So,
that's a good point.
I had to
It's a good. It's good. They predict words.
They predict words.
Yeah.
They predict code. But yeah.
But it is powerful. I think that kind of feed a prompt into a prompt. Like I did that today. I was setting up a notebook in Notebook LM, and I was like, man, I don't want to write a paragraph to help you understand it. So I went into ChatGPT, gave it two or three, you know, like a sentence or two. Said, this is what I'm trying to do. Write me a note that I can give Notebook LM for more context. Gave me a big, you know, paragraph or two. I read it to make sure it made sense. Pasted it into Notebook LM. And you're sort of like, that's a multiplier too. When you're like, start small, the AI multiplies that. You check, the next AI multiplies that, and you can kind of build on top of each other.
En français, j'ai fait une entrevue lundi pour mon podcast avec Cynthia Savard-Saussier de Shopify pour constater les outils qu'ils ont là-bas en vibe coding. Ils font tout du vibe coding. Ils sont tous rendus là à produire ça, les UX writers, les UX recherche, ils sont tous là-dessus en ce moment. Ils expérimentent beaucoup, puis je trouve qu'il y a un gap énorme entre des Shopify de ce monde ou des startups et des entreprises qui font du logiciel en ce moment qui ont no clue. Ah, il faudrait aller dans l'AI. Aucune idée de ce qu'ils vont faire. Mais il faut aller dans l'AI. Mais ils ne savent pas c'est quoi. Et de voir Shopify, de l'intégrer aussi bien, d'entendre ce que vous avez dit ce soir, je trouve ça intéressant. Mais il y a un énorme gap parce que je recevais aussi des messages sur mon Messenger pendant que vous parliez. Puis il y en a qui me demandaient, c'est quoi Claude? T'sais, on est là aussi. Là, c'est pas tout le monde qui a exploré et qui a expérimenté avec tout encore. Là, on est dans un... Et ici d'ailleurs, pour tous ceux qui ont des questions qu'ils n'osent pas poser, posez-les. Parce qu'on est là. Il y a un gap énorme. Là. Que tu peux partager le PDF dont tu as parlé tantôt.
Yes. I'll share the presentation I have that I made for my company. That was, it's like 10 slides, and it's just like, here's which tools today that you need to use, but I tried to limit it. And some of them I'm like, you need to know Git. And the other ones it's like, you just can play with those, but yeah. I think there are really two levels. Je peux répéter la question aussi.
En fait, pour continuer sur, dans la même veine, là, moi, ce que j'aimerais savoir, c'est comment, le comment. T'sais, on veut faire du prototypage, on ne veut pas le faire dans Figma. C'est quoi les étapes pour arriver, t'sais, faire un prompt qui mène à un résultat? Là. T'sais, vous en avez parlé, mais c'était comme très haut niveau, là.
Je pense que c'est beaucoup d'essais-erreurs. Trouver un des outils, donc il y en a comme cinq leaders en ce moment, puis c'est beaucoup d'essais-erreurs. C'est comme ça que, honnêtement, j'ai essayé au début, puis après j'ai vu tout de suite ce qui marchait, ce qui ne marchait pas, mais j'ai peut-être plus. Ce qui marche, c'est jamais trop vague. C'est comme si on parlait à quelqu'un qui a un intern comme ça qui est motivé, qui a toutes les connaissances du monde, mais qui ne sait pas quoi faire. Souvent, c'est vraiment comme si je parlais à quelqu'un et je décris tout. Donc, va prendre ce bouton qui est à côté de l'autre bouton dans cette page-là et fais ça. J'essaie vraiment de parler comme si je parlais à quelqu'un. Un autre pro tip aussi, c'est que j'utilise la dictation, donc sur Mac ou autre. Donc, je le fais juste, puis je parle comme si je parlais à quelqu'un. Mais la seule erreur, et je ne sais plus qui l'a dit tantôt, la seule grosse erreur, c'est de dire « fais-moi Duolingo ». Ça, c'est juste trop large, mais en général, si c'est à peu près… C'est dur à dire c'est quoi la bonne taille, mais ouais, peut-être une suggestion.
Il y a aussi un problème, c'est quand tu lui donnes trop. Tu lui as dit là, « fais-moi Duolingo », mais quand tu lui donnes 40 pages de documentation… Il ne sait pas par où commencer. Il a juste pas de piste par premières étapes à faire pour réussir que ça marche. Juste pour revenir sur les usages aussi, un des usages qui peut être assez intéressant pour les UX, on parlait de prototype avancé, là, de pas juste une image, mais quelque chose de fonctionnel. Bah, typiquement, faire des formulaires dans Figma, des formulaires où tu peux vraiment rentrer du texte, des chiffres, tu par exemple un tout effet, des choses comme ça, c'est impossible à faire ça en prototype Figma. Si tu veux faire un user test, où tu as ce genre de formulaire d'inscription, s'inscrire à, par exemple, créer son compte et des choses comme ça, bon, bah là, c'est l'outil idéal pour ça, parce que si tu peux vraiment taper ton texte dans le champ. Ouais, exactement. Tu lui dis, puis même tu peux lui donner directement le design en lui disant j'ai fait ce design-là de formulaire, fais-le moi, mais fais-le interactif et vraiment interactif avec du tout effet, etc.
Ben ouais, ça va. C'est comme un raccourci si tu veux pour éviter une description qui est super longue, mais en même temps faut pas se surprendre si on arrive à 40, 100, 200 mots. Quand on est suffisamment précis, mais en effet, rendu à 40 pages, peut-être qu'il va commencer à oublier des trucs. Là, il appelle ça, je pense, context rot.
C'est comme un paragraphe, je pense. Ouais. Essayer de décrire en un paragraphe l'essentiel, sachant que plus tard, on peut quand même lui redire « OK, ça, c'est pas ça, mais après, on refine. » Mais je pense commencer par un paragraphe de l'idée, du but précis. C'est pour ça que je le fais quand j'écris un ticket, parce que c'est comme si c'était un ticket pour un développeur.
Yeah, I think that's where you need to. Well, I think there's a couple of answers. Like one, be a PM. A PM isn't going to say build Duolingo. They're going to think through the process. They're going to break it down into epics, and then break that down into a ticket, and break it down into the smallest chunk you can break it down into. I always recommend to learn to code. Subtle plug, I have a course that teaches designers to code, but I won't even mention it, the name, but it's genuinely like the whole reason I even set that up is because if you understand kind of the architecture of what goes into a product and like at a high level what can be done, I think you have a big advantage of like, okay, what does it take to make a button open a modal? You know, I can say, hey, AI, make this button open a modal, or I can say, you know, put a state variable and, you know, put an on click on the button that opens a modal. Get the modal from Radix, which is a you know, component library. Like, if you have a bit of knowledge, it goes a long way. And one last tip, there's a content creator called The Primogen. Maybe I can share links after. They lock themselves in a room with actually, I think, the people from Cursor, locked themselves in a room for like a week and fully vibe coded. Like, no, he was a principal engineer at Netflix, like really, really smart guy. But they built this entire app only vibe coding. So even just watching that video, I think, is interesting to learn, okay, how does somebody who knows kind of code in and out, what steps do they take? How do they start? You know, they started with a whiteboard, like a PM would or like a product designer would, right? What are the ideas, step by step, turning into something tangible?
J'entends que le thème sous-jacent dans tout ça pour répondre à la question, c'est il faut tout d'abord avoir une bonne idée de où on veut s'en aller, puis après ça, il faut le décrire carrément. Puis souvent avec les IA, on se rend compte que quand ton prompt est trop court parce que tu es pressé ou je sais pas quoi, puis il manque quelque chose, tu peux revenir puis tu poses la question, ben, ce que je lui ai demandé. Puis, règle générale, il va suivre les ordres, il va suivre les demandes assez au pied de la lettre. Je pense pas que c'est nécessaire de parler de state variables.
Yeah, that was a bit too maybe specific.
Mais c'est correct parce que je pense que ça se rejoint dans un sens. On exprime la même chose avec différents mots, puis l'IA est quand même capable d'aller chercher, de le mettre sur une page, puis paf, ça fait un prototype. L'exemple des formulaires est fantastique. Aussi, si on pense la foutue validation des formulaires dans la vie, là, c'est lourd, c'est difficile, ça vaut la peine de faire des bons formulaires. Donc, voilà.
Je sais que Duolingo, toutes les semaines, ils se mettent dans une salle pendant 2 heures et ils essayent ensemble. Donc, c'est la seule façon d'apprendre, je pense. Ils essayent un petit peu, beaucoup, puis ils se donnent des petits challenges, mais donc ils se donnent un but. Et après, de ce but-là, ils essayent de le décrire le mieux possible. Puis après, même si c'est faux, ils peuvent quand même continuer.
One fun fact about on that, by the way, if you've all seen Duolingo Chess, they recently launched Chess. That was built over 3 months by one designer, one PM, zero engineers. They built the whole thing, prototyped it, all vibe coded. Then they had two engineers hop on, kind of get it ready for production and shipped it. Incredible success story, I think, of. I just want to add one more thing there that I think is really important, is I think code can be scary, but you're not working in a database. Like, just try. I think just, okay, I want to make a recipe app. Let me open Cursor and bang my head and try and figure out how to do it. I recently had one of the designers on my team do that same thing. He saw a problem in our product. He had never used Git. He didn't even have NPM or Node installed. He struggled through it. 2 days later, he came back and he had a first prototype. Like, someone who had zero knowledge of code, never written a line of code, but struggled through it, wasn't afraid to try, and eventually made it.
And you say no dumb question to AI, so you can tell them, what's Git?
What is Node?
What is Node?
How do I get it?
I do that still after 15 years. Like, what Git command is...
Michael, pour pas vendre le punch, tu as été l'hôte d'une soirée au sujet du vibe coding également. Je pense qu'on cherchait peut-être des outils justement pour commencer. J'ai V0 qui me vient en tête, Bolt. Est-ce qu'il y en a d'autres que
Can
tu peux peut-être...
Can I quickly jump in? Also, Framer has a new tool. If you want to ship like a website, because websites don't have databases, but Framer is React. So it's like a really nice... Segway, yeah, where you're not building like a full product.
Mais bon, vous avez mentionné aussi FigmaMake, bien sûr. Je pense à WeWeb, qui est moins connu, qui à la base est un outil plutôt low-code, c'est-à-dire vraiment fait pour, comme Framer ou comme Webflow. Mais là, récemment, ils ont rajouté tout ce qui était AI et vibe coding. Donc ça, c'est plutôt cool. Tu as Onlook, qui ne marche pas super bien encore, mais qui est vraiment destiné pour les designers. Donc c'est vraiment une version simplifiée de Cursor pour les designers, avec beaucoup plus d'emphase sur le UI que le code. C'est les outils que j'ai en tête notamment, mais ça évolue très très vite. Là, il y en a vraiment tous les jours.
I was just going to add builder.io. Some of the folks actually live in Montreal. Like, I know one of their, I think it's head of engineering is based here in Montreal, but same concept, you know, box connects to your Figma and you just tell it what to do.
Je pense que ça vaudra la peine là, de peut-être accumuler une liste de liens, mettre ça sur la page là, parce que on parle dans les micros là, mais ça va être enregistré et diffusé. Il va y avoir une page web, on pourra, je pense, partager certaines des ressources au sujet desquelles on a discuté. Je pense que c'est un bon moment pour clore le tout. On approche l'heure. On vous remercie énormément de votre participation, de la discussion. Merci aussi aux gens du public qui ont participé. On vous rappelle, là, il y a un rabais pour CanUX qui est dispo si ça vous intéresse. C'est une conférence... 30% off. C'est une conférence super intéressante. Puis, est-ce que on fait l'appel toujours? Est-ce qu'il y a des gens qui ont des jobs à offrir, des postes ouverts? Vous pouvez venir les annoncer. Ce marché difficile, on le sait. Mais sinon, on va... Oh! Peut-être? Non? OK. Bon, sinon, on vous souhaite... on vous remercie d'avoir été là, puis on se rejoint à la prochaine. Merci à tous.
Merci.